This is your dose of daily market wisdom with Master Trader Nick Santiago. Starting from humble beginnings, Nick has been beating the markets for over two decades. He shares with you his take on the profitable trades that will have you moving towards financial freedom in no time at all. To see an in-depth review of his track record and much more, go to InTheMoneyStocks.com. Welcome. This is your daily dose of daily market wisdom with Master Trader Nick Santiago. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 4/4/22, show number 378. Sorry we took the break. I was in Las Vegas for a couple days and couldn't get to a microphone. But Nick, Elon Musk buying nearly 10% of Twitter, and the media's response is, oh, well, it's good for Twitter. At least it's good for their finances. I mean, they're like deliberately misreading the whole thing.
When I saw that this morning, I did a cartwheel. I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. The stock is up 25% today, so it is good for shareholders, and I think shareholders love it. But I'm not so sure the Twitter insiders or the Twitter management team loves it. So I know, you know, Elon Musk is very vocal and outspoken. And now he may even have somebody sit on the board very soon. So I think it's really disruptive to their overall plan. And I just chuckled at it. I loved it. But it's great for the stock. The stock is trading at up 25%, nearly at $49.50 a share right now.
Hey, and I mean, the guy is like had it in for them. He's been talking about their censorship, big tech censorship. So what's next? Google and Facebook, will he be taking positions there as well?
Oh, I would love to see it. I would love to see it, but I don't know if he would. I think, you know, Twitter being a stock that's, you know, was just trading at around, you know, the mid 30s, this was just ripe. It was just prime for him to go in there and do that. You know, when you look at a stock like Google, so many shares outstanding and it trades at, you know, $2,800 or, I mean, he could go in there and disrupt Facebook right now. I don't see why he can't, you know, this is, might be the perfect time to do it and, you know, start to right that ship. But, you know, these companies with the censorship, it's just become almost disgraceful. Honestly, I just got out of a Facebook trade myself. I bought it around the low 200s and I just dumped it. But, overall, I have to say, you know, it makes you not want to own these companies. So maybe he could put these companies back to, you know, where they become a little bit respectable again. But, you know, the censorship and all of this stuff and, you know, it just becomes too much. You know, what Twitter did with the Hunter Biden laptop and stuff. I mean, people are turned off by these companies. That's why these stocks are so low.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Everybody is fed up with them. And hey, sick of it myself. I've been the victim of it as well, and I've it's led to me not talking about certain things because I know that I'm just going to get slammed by them and eventually kicked off the platform, right?
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, if you don't get kicked off, you know, you may get throttled and you may not get the viewership. You know, that they have so many ways of controlling everything that people see right now, and you know, people are just, I think, not, I shouldn't say people, but the people out there that know what's going on, or these podcasters that have great podcasts and all of a sudden they get censored or kicked off, they've had enough. And you know, when I go to a site and I want to see somebody and next thing I know, he's been removed, I'm kind of removing myself from that company. And I think more people are starting to do that.
For good reason too, man, for good reason. So this is welcome. It's a wake-up call. I think it's in response to what Twitter did to the Babylon Bee for talking about a certain government official who's a tranny and basically saying he's the man of the year. And we'll leave it at that. I think this is retribution. And wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall of Twitter's boardroom?
Oh, boy, I got to tell you, it must be something this morning. I mean, you know, if they didn't know it was coming and they just found out this morning, I think they're going to have some emergency Zoom meetings. So, you know what's going on over there. These guys are running every which way but sideways. Oh,
they're freaked. They're freaked,
yeah, they
for
are,
sure.
They are definitely flipping out. And, you know, I think from here it could only get better because Elon, you know, if he takes a bigger stake in this thing, I mean, after all, he is the richest man in the world, so he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and he could just go to the bank and borrow it. Well, Jack Dorsey's net worth is only $10.2 billion, according to Wikipedia. And so I don't know how much of Twitter he actually owns, but it's definitely vulnerable from a takeover standpoint because earnings have been for nothing. And he's been running the company as his own little fiefdom there. So,
well, you know, over the weekend, it was funny because Jack Dorsey came out and said that he's been hindering free speech and he regrets it. I just thought that was,
he does now.
So ironic when we saw the news this morning about Elon Musk taking the 9% stake in the company.
Hey, once he has somebody on the board, then they can expose all the shadow banning, all of the throttling of traffic, all the things that they do that are really downright nefarious.
It really is a despicable display of management, to be honest. And again, you know, we'll see how this plays out, but I think it's the best thing ever.
I love it. I love it, man. It's so great. I mean, to see the tech titan get his comeuppance in spades. I mean, it's complete humiliation. And it just shows that you can't run a company without any regard to the bottom line and just become a political mouthpiece. Eventually they catch on. Well, enough of that. So tech stocks are rallying this morning.
Yeah, we have a really good rally in tech today. You have the NASDAQ composite up about 1.24%. Apple, Google, Tesla, you name it, Amazon, they're all higher today. Tesla, in fact, is higher by 3.5%. Then you have Twitter, obviously up 25%, and the semiconductors are strong. So, I mean, tech is really acting very, very well as of late. And today, really, no problems from what I could see. It's holding up really, really well.
All right. And so last Friday, what happened to transports?
Well, this is something that I think everybody should be aware of. I know, you know, it really wasn't talked about very much over the weekend, but the transport stocks got pummeled on Friday. And I don't mean pummeled. They were down. I'm talking about the Dow Jones Transportation Index was down 5%. And even today, it's really not that strong, down another 0.5% or so. But when transports start to fall, like E.F. Hutton says, you better listen. And they really took it on the chin. Looks like trucking rates are declining. Shipping rates are starting to plummet. And that is definitely problematic and, you know, usually signals that the economy is making a bad turn for the worse. So we definitely have to keep an eye on that. Even today, I'm looking at J.B. Hunt, which is major trucking outfit, and they're down 2.7% again today. The railroad stocks are all weaker today. Union Pacific down almost 2%. And then you look at a stock like Ryder. They got pounded on Friday. They're also down. And then FedEx and UPS, which are more the delivery type names, also under pressure today as well.
You know, and we go back to the Dow theory. They always talked about the industrials being confirmed by the transports. So when you have them peaking at the same time and then crashing at the same time, right?
Yeah, when they peak at the same time or they make new highs together, it's a very bullish signal. When they diverge, you get what they call a non-confirmation signal. That's kind of where you are now. But if they start to both make new lows together, that is a very, very negative signal.
Interesting. Well, should be watching that transport index, which I don't know if that means interest rates are heading lower again. I'm not sure. You know, we haven't talked much about interest rates lately, Nick, but 30-year mortgage, 5%, which isn't really a bad deal when you consider that your real interest rate is still somewhere between minus 10 and minus 15.
But it was a much better deal if you just go back a few months, right? So, you know, it definitely made real estate more expensive for anybody trying to get a mortgage now. And how home prices are still very high and elevated. So, you know, I've never seen the real estate market quite like this in Florida. But anytime you have the 30-year fixed mortgage go up the way it has, it's going to be a big negative. And you could see it even in you know, all of the numbers that have been reflected lately, they've gone down a lot already. So, you know, that's not a positive to see people not refiing anymore, or people saying, hey, I just can't afford this home anymore at this interest rate. And that will have a big negative effect as well on the overall economy.
Yes, it will, no doubt. And that will be felt eventually. But is it enough to contain inflation? What they're doing, probably not, right?
No. And inflation is here for the duration. I mean, we probably are looking at, you know, high inflation for the foreseeable future. Now, could it be peaking temporarily? Sure. I think that's a possibility as we get into maybe, you know, midway this year, July, August. I think, you know, maybe inflation could be tamed a little bit. But overall, you know, I don't see inflation going away anytime soon.
Yep. Yeah, these things go in cycles, and then there's inflationary expectations that start to come into play. All of these things happen, and then the fun begins.
That's right.
And when it lasts for a long time, it really affects investment behavior. Speaking of which, gold been trading sideways for the past few weeks.
Yeah.
What do you see here?
Well, as we said before, you know, as long as that war goes on in Russia and Ukraine, I really don't see gold going down much. In fact, it can only go higher. Right now, it's just been treading water for about 3 weeks now. It did put a little bit of a peak in early March. And again, from that time forward, it really hasn't declined very much. So if there's a resolution, I believe, as I've said before, in Russia and Ukraine, I do think gold is in for a bit of a pullback, maybe even a little bit more than that. But if, as long as this war goes on, and if it escalates, obviously it's the ultimate fear trade. It'll go right back up and make new highs. So it's kind of tied to the war. And I think that's what it's telling us. And I think we saw that the way gold acted before and right as the war began, and nothing has really changed from there.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see where it's going to head, but you know, obviously the war has had some influence in it. But don't forget, it was trending higher already before the war.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and it was. But the market always knows ahead of time what's coming. So in my opinion, gold was sniffing this war out for us, and we just didn't realize it. And you know, gold is such a good precursor for events. And you know, tracking it for all these years and watching these patterns, you know, it's kind of remarkable sometimes that, you know, gold was trickling higher before the war even began. And sure enough, it had a big, major rally in February into early March. And it's still holding up very well, you know, basically consolidating underneath the 1950 level right now.
Hey, and talking about war, I just want to point out that before World War One, basically the world was convinced that peace was inevitable, that there would never be major wars again. And look how wrong they could be. Within like a few short years, the world was at war. And that's what you got to be aware of here. And gold, I guess, is kind of saying that. And
that's
maybe
right.
Maybe Bitcoin as well, Nick.
Yeah, maybe Bitcoin as well. I mean, I wouldn't rule anything out. And I, as I've said to my members, I said, as long as this war continues, the worst off everybody is. This is not something that you want to see continuing, because that can only lead to escalation. And the reason why the market's able to rally right now is because the war is contained in Russia and Ukraine. The minute it steps into a NATO nation or elsewhere, it's going to be a much bigger event, and it's going to be a big negative for the markets.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, that's it for today. Make sure you go over to Nick's site in themoneystocks.com. See how Nick has been beating the averages for nearly three decades now. And while you're at it, take a look at the Twitter feeds at ITMS, at NickSantiago01, at Kerry Lutz. Your emails are always welcome, kl@kerrylutz.com. Nick, we will catch up with you on Wednesday.
Sounds good, Kerry.
Welcome. This is your daily dose of daily market wisdom with master trader Nick Santiago. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is 4/8/2022. Well, markets are rebounding a little bit today, Nick.
Yeah, we got a nice little rebound in the Dow Jones. You also have the S&P, which was negative earlier, turned up. The only index that is down today is the NASDAQ Composite, but that's well off of its lows. So, you know what we say on Fridays, Kerry, somehow, some way, the markets always find a way to turn green, and they are positive today. So we'll see how this Friday ends, but so far, so good for the major indexes.
All right. Well, so far, so good. So we wanted to go a little more in depth than we do in our Daily Market Wisdom podcast. And first thing I want to talk to you about is their article in Zero Hedge today. And some quant has basically said that the interest rates, they can't go over 1% on the Fed funds rate, or everything is going to come crashing down. And he showed a chart that each time they tightened since the Great Recession of 08 and 09, each tightening round has been below the one before. So rates go lower. You know, when they raise them, they start tightening. They don't go as high as the time before. Last time they went up, it was 2.5%. So this time the quant is calling for 1%.
Yeah, no, he might be onto something there. I'm not sure if it's going to be 1% that does it. What I would say, though, is the scenarios are a little bit different this time. Right now, we have very, very weak markets in Europe. And I don't mean the stock market per se, but when you look at the European currency, it's at 108 right now. The trend is down. So as that starts to break down, you know, what happens a lot of times, you'll get capital flows or money running back into the U.S. Recently, the dollar has been making a new high on the chart, not a all-time high, but it has been very, very strong. So it's hard to say if 1% will do the trick. But historically speaking, he's absolutely correct. Every time yields go too high, the market, you know, will break down. How high can they go this time around? You know, it's anybody's guess. Overall, what people have to remember is, The Fed funds rate, it should really follow the 2-year treasury note. And if it does that, I don't even think you need a Federal Reserve. And a lot of traders in my business and many I've spoken with have said the same thing. So that's really interesting that he points out, you know, 1% will do the trick. I mean, right now, when you look at the 2-year yield, that's at 2.5%. It's basically right in line almost with the 10-year, which is at around 2.7%. So we are definitely looking at a market that, generally speaking, is almost always looking for quantitative easing, money printing, some form of that. But a lot of times, markets themselves, stock markets, can rally up because money has nowhere else to go. And if it comes into the U.S. thinking that's the safe haven, you know, it may be able to survive a higher interest rate.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the case. And like you said, the euro is in bad shape. When we look at the dollar is, like you said, going to new highs. It hit 100 today on the Dixie. And that is a very significant milestone, if you will, a very significant number psychologically, if nothing else.
It is. It is a very psychological number. And in all fairness, the dollar is into resistance now because you're basically going back to the 2020 highs. So, you know, we'll have to see how the dollar performs going forward. But honestly, when I look at the euro chart, it looks horrible. Now, it gets oversold and then it bounces. And this is a rare event because the dollar has been so strong, but we see gold holding up so well. We see oil coming off the highs, but still, you know, well above $90 a barrel. We see other commodities like copper. They're maybe off the highs a little bit, but they're still around the high levels. So we're seeing all of these different events taking place. And, you know, it's a different environment sometimes. So I understand where he's coming from. We're saying, hey, maybe 1% is all the market can handle. Then it's going to completely, you know, tank. But I'm not so sure this time around, just simply because the landscape is a little bit different geopolitically and globally.
All right. So one of our listeners he put up a comment on YouTube. It wasn't with you and me, it was another interview, but he said, for the past 40 years, financial has controlled commodities. And he says, now commodities are going to control financials.
Oh, there could be some truth to that. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with it. I mean, we are looking at inflation starting, and we talked about the inflation low perfectly back in March 2020. I mean, nobody really called it any better than we did here on the program. And, you know, those inflationary waves can last 4, 5, 6 years. So, you know, there's some truth to that, but we have to wait and see what the markets ultimately will do going forward. There's so much happening and everything is interconnected now. It's not just that easy anymore. And I don't think it's been that easy for a while, but you know, we'll have to wait and see. And, you know, again, that's why I carry it. To be honest, I have to use charts. Without charts, I would be lost in the water because I simply can't figure out this puzzle or this soap opera. There's so many moving parts to it.
Yes, and definitely proves the need for charts because you can't believe anything that's coming out of the media. I don't know if you caught this snippet, but there was some lib get-together, media get-together at a college, and a freshman goes up there, and Brian Stelter, and I can't make my voice go that high or I do an impersonation, he asks him, you say that Fox News is so bad, but isn't CNN right up there with them? What about the fake Russia probe? And what about Nicholas Sandman? And on and on and on. And then, of course, Brian Stelter never answers it, but he was totally, this kid owned him.
I saw it, and I actually loved every minute of it. And Brian Stelter came out with just some egregious comment. It was the worst response I ever heard, saying, you know, we need to work on that. You have no idea what goes on behind the scenes. Well, we do have an idea what goes behind the scenes, and it's called a narrative. And the kid pointed that out as well. He was very well spoken, and I applaud him for it. But I did catch it. And again, you know, everything nowadays is just broken up into teams. You're either on Team Democrat, Team Republican. You know, nobody's really on the team or the side of the U.S. I remember just 9 months ago, 9 months ago, hearing how bad Ukraine is, hearing that it's the money laundering capital of the world, hearing how it's filled with people that are in the Nazi party, hearing all of these things. And now you can't get the media to stop talking about how great Ukraine is. It's the biggest reversal you've ever seen. And again, it's just a promotion of narrative. And that's all the media is these days. It's 100% propaganda.
Yeah, propaganda, narrative. You know, it so reminds me of the book, the movie, 1984. Because remember, at one moment, they're fighting Eurasia, and they're the big enemy. And then the next minute, they've had peace, but they're fighting Asia. And it's exactly the same thing. And nobody's even aware that we're now fighting somebody else because, you know, that's just the way it works.
That is exactly the way it works. And, you know, it looks like the world is playing out exactly to that script from the book of 1984. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. George Orwell, either he was a genius and could foresee the future, or he was just writing the script for them.
Yeah, well, I don't think he was any friend of the elites, because really everything he wrote, Animal Farm, all of that was really condemning the elites and groupthink and propaganda and collectivism, all of that.
Well, one thing he said that always resonated with me, he said, don't let it happen. And, you know, this is, I guess, where we are at this stage in society. You know, will we let it happen? And unfortunately, you know, I've never seen anything like this. The world is upside down, at least in my lifetime. Maybe somebody has seen it during World War II or maybe perhaps World War I. But, you know, another thing he said also is said the consequences of every act are included in the act itself. And I mean, the guy was just spot on.
Yeah, I love that. The consequences of every act are included in the act itself, right?
That's right.
All right. So as far as the geopolitical scene, what's happening, it's much more pronounced in Europe, but it's certainly affecting the U.S. as well.
Oh, it's affecting everywhere. But let's keep things in perspective. I know when we talk about everything that's going on, especially in Russia and Ukraine, you know, they kind of, the media will blame inflation on this war, but inflation was happening way before this war even began. So we have to take that into consideration as well. And again, just the policy errors here, the money printing by the central banks, the all of the free money giveaway deals are over here, open borders in the United States. I mean, you know, we are looking at a lot of liquidity still in the system from all of these policies. And you know, again, that money has to go somewhere. And, you know, it's still holding up in the stock market.
Hey, and used car prices are still high. There was an article in Zero Hedge about that. They think it might be coming down a little bit. I don't believe it because you've got supply chain disruptions. You know, a lot of auto parts are manufactured in Ukraine and in Russia. And, you know, the global economy, you can't just chop out a meaningful section of it and expect things are going to be okay.
You can't. And you know, right now, the biggest thing is, you know, we're kind of being primed about a potential food shortage. And even in my local Publix, I'm starting to see some shelves are a little bit barren. So, you know, this is definitely a trying time. But again, hopefully we stop this and we don't let it happen. And, you know, honestly, this can be resolved quickly. This is not, I don't even think these decisions or problems are hard or difficult to fix. But you know, you could get oil down very, very quickly if you just go out there and start pumping oil again, pumping that gas again. I mean, it's not that difficult, but for some reason, you know, the greenies out there, they just don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, it's all part of the disruption. Disrupt the energy supply chain, disrupt the food supply chain, and I guess disrupt the brain supply chain.
That's an understatement, but yes, that has been disrupted the most.
Yeah, and maybe that's, you know, we see that for kids, you know, wearing masks, it's like impeded their development.
It really has. In fact, I was just watching a video that my son showed me, and it was a woman had a child where she can't get the mask off of the kid now. He doesn't feel safe. He's almost programmed to wear his mask. And, you know, again, a lot of this that we're looking at is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this, at least in my lifetime. But, you know, these kids have been programmed. You know, the first 5, 7, 8 years of a child's life is very influential what he's going to see. He's almost like he's hypnotically programmed. And again, just a horrible, horrible thing to see these kids with masks on, if you ask me.
Hey, and I don't know if you caught the new song that's out called Sweet Florida.
I have caught it. Yeah. Van Zandt, I think, right. Produced that. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad there. It's, you know, it's a little political. We don't really get into politics because economics really trumps politics when you get down to it. And whatever their agenda is, but it was a good song. And you should definitely go out and listen to it. We'll try to put a link to it in the show notes if we can get it to come up. And, well, so looking ahead here, we're kind of at a pivotal time, aren't we?
We are at a very pivotal time. And right now, when you look at these markets, they've had a very, very ugly first quarter. And in fact, if you look at technology, it actually started around Thanksgiving where they topped out. Now the markets are trying to recover, but it looks like the recovery is happening on money flow coming into the U.S. because they're scared to be at other places. If you look at Europe, they have a broken market. The bond market is a disaster. Japan is, in my opinion, is the same. It's a disaster. So where do you really focus? You have a war going on. You have a separation taking place between the East and the West right now. I mean, if you want harmony in the world, you have to trade with each other. If you don't trade with each other, then you're going to have discord. And that's what we're looking at right now. We're looking at a real problem going on around the world. It's turning into East versus West. It's always sides. Everybody's always picking teams to be on. And the world just can't operate like that.
Yeah, not any longer. Not any longer, that's for sure. The problems the world faces are global. Declining resource production, and that's commodities and energy. And largely due to our own self-constricting policies in the name of the Green New Deal or whatever, the green economy, and really nobody's in charge here. We're a runaway train. The engineer has passed out or has died behind the controls at full speed, and you know what happens to runaway trains?
Yeah, well, they fall off the track. But the funny thing is, you know, we just don't know who's in charge here. But this can all be prevented. I just never understand how we can allow it to go on like this. But, you know, again, I'm just one person with a voice, a small one at that.
Yes, you and me both.
But the train is certainly falling off the track.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I guess that's it for now. Make sure you go to Nick's site, inthemoneystocks.com. See how he's beaten the markets for decades. The Twitter feeds, at ITMS, at NickSantiago01, and at Kerry Lutz. And your emails are always welcome at kl@kerrylutz.com. Nick, we will talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good, Kerry.